The John Age Project.
Trust no one. Trust no one. Trust no one.
You found it. You're here. You're headlong down the runaway train that is Vietnamic Age, and I am your host, John Age. It's a pleasure to be back with you once again on the program. We got Mrs. Sarah Dye coming up from Schooner Creek Farm. She's going to get into her family's persecution at the hands of the communist trash known as Antifa. But before we get into that, check out AnomicAge.com. You can see all the social media links at the top. You can like all the likes, subscribe to all the subscriptions. You can sign up for the newsletter. That's going to be increasingly important as we go into full despotism under Chairman Biden. Also, you can download the iPhone and or Android app. When you do so, make sure you turn on the notifications. You can be notified every time there's a show on the horizon. Most importantly for me, paypal.me/AnomicAge if you want to become a sponsor. Patreon.com/AnomicAge if you just like to go full bore and do it on the regular. I won't belabor those points anymore. Check out AnomicAge.com. If you'll stick around for just a mere matter of moments, we'll be joined by our guest on the other side. Stick around. I'm pleased to welcome Mrs. Sarah Dye into the AnomicAge today. Sarah is a wife, mother, and small-scale organic farmer who homeschools her three young children. Since 2011, Schooner Creek Farm has peaceably sold at the Bloomington Community Farmers Market as their sole source of livelihood. Recently, radicals began harassing them and protesting at the booth within the market for their alleged political views. They were helpless against the onslaught of terror, which the mayor of the city of Bloomington publicly endorsed, along with the city and the market's employees. Finally, they were able to obtain an attorney, and they are now fighting back. Thank you so much, Sarah, for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's good to be here.
Indeed. Well, I'm excited to talk to you. I know I followed you up on Arc Midnight a couple weeks ago, and I was excited because it really reminded me I needed to talk to you, if nothing else. Oh. So I'm glad we got together today. And I guess first and foremost, for those who are not privy to what your story really entails, kind of get into what's going on with this, because I know there's probably a huge demographic out there going, what are you talking about, farmers market? Why are people harassing you? Why are people trying to shut you down? So let's get into that and sort of go from there.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Well, it's difficult to know where to start because this is kind of a long story. And essentially the situation is that in my younger years as a young woman and in my late teens, I had lived in a college town and had adopted a lot of the, what you might call radical, far leftist views. And that was kind of a part of who I was for many years. And I had a lot of acquaintances and friends in the community who shared those radical left views, things such as embracing Karl Marx, even though most of us hadn't even read any of Karl Marx's books, but just, you know, touting communism and this, the whole narrative I'm sure that many are familiar with that we see today on the radical left. And I have three sons, and as my oldest son was coming into school age around that time, 2015, 2016, when Trump began campaigning and that sort of thing, my views drastically shifted. And it's almost as though I kind of had the wool taken off of my eyes. And it was almost like a cascade of just a whole bunch of like different experiences and conversations that I had with people. And I was essentially shedding what I would call white guilt. And realizing that, you know, it's okay to love my country. It's okay to not be ashamed of myself because of my skin color. And, you know, there was never any hate in my heart for others or anything like that. But what I started realizing is that when I would discuss certain talking points, like, for instance, the importance of securing our borders and the migrant crisis that was happening really thickly in Europe at that time and still is really, you know, some of, basically talking about things that mainstream media was not touching, crime statistics in America and the demographics of those things, basically taboo subjects that to the radical left you cannot talk about at all, or they will call you derogatory names such as quote unquote white supremacist. So I distanced myself from, well, there was a distancing that happened. I shouldn't say I distanced myself. Many of those former leftist friends and acquaintances distanced themselves from me. And over time, having negative experiences and then not just people I knew, but like online observing conversations and seeing how hateful, truly hateful, the left is. And I hate to say the left because that is such a general term, but essentially there's a large group of people in America today who hate America. They hate the founding fathers. They hate the history of everything that Europeans have ever done. They live in a narrative that is framed by hatred for white people. And they believe that atrocities that were committed in the past, that they should hold, you know, today's people accountable for those things while omitting the stories of atrocities that have been committed by all people of all cultures for, you know, time immemorial all over the world, you know, omitting that information out. And essentially, I'm kind of rambling here, but there was a shift that happened and I changed my views essentially. And experiencing the hate from coming from those people is really what I think pushed my views to be even more conservative and more, I guess what you would call, you know, conservative. So, sorry, John, I'm kind of.
No, you're fine. You're spot on. I mean, I was going to say, I wouldn't say a lot like you. I don't know your whole story, but I mean, growing up, I grew up kind of a similar demographic, I suppose, and in a similar college town. And I sort of gravitated to myself, skateboarding and punk rock and hardcore and all these things. And in my own mind, I never really viewed those as left until I suppose I really stepped out of the box of that. And then I realized like, oh, that's what all that was. Like I was supposed fairly ignorant to a lot of this when I was growing up and in my teenage years, because I didn't really digest the right left paradigm. I was just like, man, I like skateboarding and punk and hardcore and all this stuff. And then stepping out of it, I was like, oh my goodness. Like I was in the hive of communism, basically. A lot of those same rhetoric and talking points are just prima facie in those sort of groups. And I didn't even get it. So I understand to a degree.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. My husband actually was a skateboarder for many years too in his younger years. So we were absolutely immersed in that culture, you know, going to the punk rock shows in the basements of the college town and, you know, that whole kind of what we thought was counterculture. And it's like, have you ever seen the original Red Dawn? It's just a classic movie from, I think, the 80s. And
absolutely. I've got it behind me in the shelves back
there. Yeah. Do you know the part in the movie where the one of the main commanders of the invading communist army realizes that he's not with the underdogs, he's with the regime, and so he quits? You know, it's kind of like that. It's like you think that you're fighting for a good cause and you're in the underdogs, but then you realize, like, you are actually, well, not you are, but what I see today is that the radical left or the anarchists or whatever you want to call these folks, they are absolutely, they are endorsed and supported by academia, mainstream media, and even the government. And anyone who is opposed to it and speaks out about it or is in opposition of it at all is labeled with these terrible derogatory names. And I'll use white supremacist as an example. And I know we were talking before you started recording, but when I grew up as a child, I learned that the definition of white supremacist was somebody who was a white person who was hateful and mean and wanted to harm others and thought that, you know, white people were the best people in the world simply because of the color of our skin and that others should be harmed and forced into submission and stuff, that this was the definition of a white supremacist, a really bad person, a hateful person. And today what I have found is that that is not the definition at all anymore of a quote unquote white supremacist. They've called me a white supremacist. I've said multiple times, I am not a white supremacist. But what I do see is in the reverse is that many of these people are anti-white. They're angry and upset. I just saw something on Twitter trending today. They wanted, you know, some of these people are saying, we need to put all cisgender white males on a barge and ship them out into the middle of the ocean. You know, it's like, my goodness, that is very hateful. That is so hateful.
That sounds pretty talented. And so,
yeah, exactly. So anyhow, waking up to this paradigm was huge for me. And I would say that my life has improved, you know, shedding a lot of the feminism and all of the hate, essentially just shedding the hate, has been great. You know, marriage is better and more healthy. We ended up having, my husband and I have ended up having two more children, and we are so grateful. You know, for a long time we were under the trance of, you know, you should only have one child because of, because you're white, essentially, and because climate change, and it's irresponsible to have more than one child and things like that. Just so much suffering and hatred coming from that faction. So life has improved, and fast forward, I joined an organization who valued conservative viewpoints and many of these viewpoints that I'm talking about here. And it was a nonprofit organization. It doesn't exist anymore. It was called Identity Europa. And again, I knew that organization at the time to be one that was engaged in peaceful and lawful activism, that had high quality people who cared about other people, cared about the environment, something I've always felt very passionately about, and also very much cared about what was happening in South Africa, which I know you've done some podcasts in the past about what's going on there. You know, preserving the historical demographics of America. Now, some people may find that offensive, but there's nothing hateful about it. It's something that I would wish for all people in their native homelands to care about and to do. Like, take Tibet, for instance. I've always been very much all about free Tibet and wanting, you know, those people and all other people to be able to preserve their culture and their historical monuments and all of these things in their own countries. And I don't think that we as Americans who are descended from the founding stock of this nation should not be allowed to do that either. So essentially, I joined that organization, and at some point after having been involved for about a year or so, and forgive me, I get a little blurry on the dates of these things, but essentially this thing happened where some woman tried to join the organization. She filled out an application and was being welcomed in. And so I was invited to go and meet with her, being that she was in my state and being that I am also a female. Us girls would always like to chat and get together. So I went to meet with her, my husband and I did. And she brought with her her husband, supposedly her husband, which I still don't know if that's the case. But it was a brief meeting. I was unimpressed, not particularly attracted to the individuals at all. They were much younger than I am and didn't really seem to have much in common. I never saw them again, but I did find out about a week or two later, I think it was maybe a week later, that the woman was not going to be allowed into the organization because she was not a good fit. And fast forward to the following year, it turns out that about a week or two or a month, I forget the dates exactly, but this couple had actually committed some heinous crime in the northern part of Indiana, which is the state that we're in. And then they tried to, you know, join this organization. So that part seems very odd to me, but they did some terrible vandalism to a synagogue in northern Indiana and spray painted swastikas on it. I mean, it was just horrible. And so naturally they're getting like prosecuted, right? So it's like the following year they're getting prosecuted, and the man who had participated in the crime has this long interview, and it was published online by Antifa, Emily Gorzinski, if anybody is familiar with this person. Deep in this interview that this guy had with FBI, it's like, I think it's like a 250 page document. there's this area in there where the law enforcement is questioning him and they're saying, have you ever been involved in this organization? Have you ever been involved in that organization? And like asking him all these questions. And then they say, have you ever met anybody who is in Identity Europa? And the guy says, well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I just met a couple last week. And then and their names were, and they said, he said mine and my husband's name, and also dropped my online anonymous handle that I was using in our private chats in the organization. So again, this is a long story, so I'll try to keep it understandable here. So this information was all published by Antifa, and for some reason, that part was extracted out and it was like blown up. And all of these local Antifa activists and anti-white, I don't know, far left radical liberals, whatever they are, organized. They created a nonprofit organization, which is essentially a branch of Antifa. They made posters with my name and phone number and address on them and were saying the most horrendous things about me. Not only were they saying, okay, here is this woman, she was a member of this organization, which we could get that to that in a minute. It has since been labeled by the SPLC as being not what I knew it to be at all. It was a big surprise, right? Sure. It was from the SPLC. Anyhow, what was so terrible about it is that essentially I was doxxed as being a member of this organization, but they couldn't just do the truth, right? They couldn't just publish the truth and say, well, here's this woman. Here's the things that she said while using this handle, this online handle, because there were, well, I'm skipping around here, sorry, but there were chats that were leaked. A group called Unicorn Riot, this is kind of a separate issue, side issue here. Unicorn Riot is like an Antifa activist, some sort of group that like doxes people, and that's kind of what they do. And they had infiltrated the chats of Identity Europa. So a lot of people from that organization were getting doxxed and slandered, and they had leaked all of these Discord chats. If people are familiar with Discord, it's just a communication platform that's mostly used by gamers, I think, but it's essentially like Facebook or something like that, where you can type messages in group rooms. It's a chat room platform. So all of these people were getting doxxed, and I was among them to get doxxed. But what was so terrible was the lying. And it was to the point where it was dangerous, John, because I had once upon a time sat at a table with these criminals. They made up all of these lies saying that we had known these people, that we were close with them, that we had trained them to commit hate crimes. I mean, just in much, much worse, and things that are so terrible, I don't even want to repeat them because they're just awful. And it was so upsetting. And so publicly, over and over, I tried to say, this is not the truth. We met these people once. We didn't know them. We never spoke with them again. We had no idea that they had committed a crime prior to meeting them. We do not associate with people like that whatsoever. We have not been involved. And what was so crazy is that these people were even trying to say that we had been under investigation by the FBI. And it's like, I think I would know about that. Like, just outright lying. No regard for the truth whatsoever. And their whole goal was to destroy us, to destroy our small business, which is our market gardening and CSA, where we sell organic produce. I'm a homeschool mom, very active in the community. You know, they wanted to see me ostracized, destitute. And why? Because they hate me, because I left their ranks. I'm no longer a radical leftist like them. Many of these locals knew that I had shifted, knew I was a Trump supporter, knew I was conservative, and no longer associating with people who live lives that are extremely unhealthy. They attacked us. It is overwhelming. I'm sorry, it's a little bit hard because there's been so much that's happened. So it's a little bit hard to document all the details, but That's kind of the start of this. They organize and campaign together to ruin people. And I'm sure that your listeners are familiar with cancel culture. That was absolutely what happened to us. There was a small farmer's market that I had helped start just a few miles away in our little hometown here, Nashville, Indiana. And two other ladies and I had gotten together and started this farmer's market. And it was just awesome. It was in its third year or second year, I believe, and it was booming. We were a nonprofit. We had formed a board of directors. I had been voted in as board president. I wrote the bylaws myself, which include a non-discrimination clause for anybody involved in the market, including board members, staff, customers, et cetera. It was just really blowing up, and it was so exciting. We were tackling all sorts of projects. We had gotten funding. The community was thrilled that I had taken a leadership position with the market. And as soon as these radical leftists started pressuring that market and the other board members, they caved instantly. They kicked me off the board, and they said that our farm could no longer even sell produce at the market. So we have been ousted from that market. Now, the big issue that when I refer to the farmers market and the lawsuit and all this, which is going quite fasting forward, but that's a separate market. So for the past almost 10 years now, my husband and I have sold our farmers market goods at the City of Bloomington Farmers Market, which is a huge market that has about 100 vendors. You know, it's a college town, so it's one of the gems of the local community, but also throughout the entire Midwest, it's certainly known as one of the most awesome events to go to. I mean, people come from all over the world to this farmers market, and it's how we make a living. So at that farmers market, all of these radicals organized these protests week after week after week. And they were in front of our booth. They were marching. They had signs, boycott Schooner Creek Farm, defund white supremacy. Some of them were shouting at our customers and calling us Nazis and calling our customers Nazi sympathizers. You know, photographing our customers, publishing their faces online, and basically intimidating and pressuring people to stop buying from us. They would shove flyers and hand flyers out in front of our booth, literally as people were trying to buy produce from us. Oh, they would say, "You better not be buying from these people. Here, take this flyer, read all about them." And of course, these flyers were totally defamatory and trying to connect us with this crime. And it just ended up, it was just awful, awful. You know, we had to have police there. We had to keep filing all these police reports. They would follow us wherever we went. I went to the library. I had been invited summer of 2019 by the grassroots conservatives to give a talk and a speech, just basically outlining what had happened at the farmers market and the whole timeline of things. The protesters followed us there. While we were inside the building, they covered our car with fake blood. We've had nails, hundreds of nails dumped in our driveway. We've had fake blood put inside of our mailbox with fascist spray painted on the sidewalk, which my 9-year-old son found. It's been really, and as you were reading the intro, you know, this relentless onslaught of terror, it's been really, it's been horrible. It's just been horrible. So I don't know if you want to rein me in here. I tend to kind of start rambling. There's certainly a lot more details I don't want to leave out, but.
Yeah, I'm not sure where to even go with this. It's just so insane. So.
Yeah.
So you think this is connected to these fools that you met with? Because, I mean, to me, when you're talking about this, that just sounds like COINTELPRO. That sounds like agent provocateurs, whoever it is you met with. I don't even know if they're legit. Did they actually serve any time, or were these just agents of the communists or something? It sounds kind of like what it might be to me.
Well, I think that's an excellent question. And my husband and I have talked about this extensively, and I think that you're right. I think you're hitting the nail on the head. The whole thing is so weird. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because I want to tell you that it was just last year that I actually Googled the name of the lady, the wife. And it's cute. I don't know if you want me to say it on here, but I mean, people can go Google these for themselves. But anyhow, this female has apparently a history of committing these similar crimes. If you go back a year or two before that, or the year prior to the synagogue incident, she and another boyfriend or husband or somebody vandalized two other types of churches. I think one was a Catholic church, maybe, and then the other one was either another Christian church or maybe a mosque. So it was like she has a history of apparently getting with these guys and going around and vandalizing places of worship. And nobody was talking about that. And to my knowledge, this woman has never been charged. The entire summer of 2019, when all of these radicals were protesting me, a farmer who's literally never been involved with any crime whatsoever, protesting me and my husband and our family, this female lives a few counties over, according to newspaper articles and arrest records and things. She's in the region. I don't know, like, what, I mean, if they had an actual concern about this, wouldn't you think they would be focusing on the person who actually was committing these crimes and maybe looking into that's dangerous? I mean, if she's free, she could do this again. So yeah, the whole thing is really scary. Now, as far as the man, I do believe he was arrested and served some time, and I don't know any more details about that. But yeah, so I was able to find this out with a Google search. And this local group called, ironically, No Space for Hate, which is an organization that formed specifically for the purpose of hating Schooner Creek Farm and wanting and trying to destroy our life, they claim to have a, quote, team of researchers. So it's so ridiculous. It's like, so their team of researchers hasn't even considered actually researching the criminals who they're, it's just so ridiculous, John. So yeah, provocateurs, very likely. The whole thing is so, so awful. And now, you know, it's a stain. It's a
terrible
stain.
It sounds like that's straight out of the playbook of the FBI to me. I mean, that's usually their MO. If you look back, I'm a huge fan of the stuff that I always say I kind of slept through in the 90s. So I've looked a lot at Ruby Ridge, Waco, Oklahoma City bombing. If you want to go flash forward all the way to the Hammond and Bundy Ranch incidents. And there's a key correlate in between all those, and that is FBI. No, not investigating it. They were the ones involved in it. They had agents in every single one of those incidences. So it's kind of their MO to always infiltrate groups and sort of play them off against each other. So it's kind of sounds very suspicious if she was vandalizing a Catholic church and a mosque and a synagogue or what have you. I mean, that's just – that's not quote-unquote white power BS. That's just instigating and infiltrating nonsense to me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's scary. It's just I still think, honestly, I'm in shock because it was just like one thing after another. Just every day there would be something new. Oh, they're going to be coming to protest at market. Another day, this organization placed an advertisement on Facebook. If anybody runs business pages on Facebook, you know, you can pay a certain amount of money and then have your ad, whatever you choose, and it will show up in people's feed. So this organization placed a Facebook ad that said Schooner Creek Farm are white supremacists. And of course, we, you know, many of us tried to report the ad. Facebook, oh, no problem. You know, that's fine. You know, Facebook, they didn't have any issue with them running that ad. So, yeah, just
because it's loving and tolerant. That's why.
Right. Right. Exactly. And one of the activists from that group or Antifa or whatever you call this guy, early on when they had started the protest, a local woman who does happen to be kind of a classical liberal, seemingly reasonable person who I'm sure her and I don't agree politically at all, but she was reasonable enough to be actually communicating with me, having conversations, and came naturally to the conclusion that I was absolutely not a threat to the community whatsoever and that these people were totally lying about me. She had invited me to go to coffee with one of these radical leftist protesters. And at first I was like, no way, I'm not going to meet with that guy. If anything, I'll see him in court because he needs to be sued for, you know, this defamation that he's doing. But then I came around and I said, okay, fine, I will go to coffee. And her plan was to mediate and have a conversation, you know, have this guy and I have a conversation with her as the mediator. Well, it never happened because he refused to meet. So this gives you another example of how unreasonable these people are. They would rather go on their lying spree than have a face-to-face talk and actually, you know, find out the truth of the situation. They were never once interested in the truth. I mean, they're perfectly capable of ascertaining the truth, and they chose to lie. And it's one thing, you know, for somebody to – it's never good to tell a lie, but it's especially terrible to tell a lie that endangers my family, because now – thanks to them, we have New York Times articles. We have been in, you know, featured in the Daily Beast. We have thousands and thousands of people who literally think that my husband and I are some sort of criminals and terrorists. And that is very scary because there are people who really want to physically harm others. And it's honestly just really scary. We had to get security cameras put up. You know, our farm is also our residence, so we've had to have security cameras put up. Fortunately, I have been in very good communication with our local law enforcement, sheriff's department, and detectives. So, you know, they're keeping an eye out, you know, for us, watching over our place too. And yeah, I mean, that's the reason that people have come out here and left the fake blood and the nails in the driveway and stuff. It is for vandalism, but it's also to send a message that, you know, we've been here at night while you're sleeping. I mean, that's the message that they want to send. And it's just not okay. It's absolutely not okay. And that's, I guess, what brings me to the current lawsuit that we have. I never in my life thought that I would be involved in a lawsuit whatsoever. And, you know, here I find myself involved in one. It's just crazy. The farmers market is run by the city. And when I say farmers market, like I said, I'm referring to the big, really wonderful farmers market where we have sold and made a living for almost a decade. It's run and operated by the Parks and Rec Department through the city. And it's been going for 45 years. It's a very successful market. This is a market where, you know, it's not just a couple of guys selling some, you know, melons out of the back of their pickup truck in a parking lot. This is a highly organized market. As I said, it's been going on for 45 years. There are strict rules at the market. You have to fill out an application to, you know, to apply to vend at the market. They don't just let anyone sell. It's very strict in that the farmers themselves have to be producing their own product. It's not like the sort of thing where you can go to an auction and buy apples and then come and resell them. It's very much focused on really like local food and community, and you know, you prepay for your booth space. You pay up front at the beginning of the season to have a booth space that you rent for the whole season. The market runs from the 1st of April through the end of October. And when this all first started, the market manager had a conversation with us where she realized kind of what was going on, and she was potentially anticipating some protests starting. This was June of 2019. She reassured my husband and I that there would not be any protesting allowed inside the market, and that there would not be any, that it would not be, they would not be allowed to hand out any flyers inside the market or distribute any defamatory material. And we were very happy to hear that at first from her. But then when it started, she wouldn't do anything. She didn't enforce the rules at all. And so I had a conversation with her and I was like, why aren't you enforcing the rules? And she would consistently say throughout the whole ordeal that they were looking into it. They weren't really sure what they could do. They were looking into it. And that if we felt unsafe, to call the police. And essentially, you know, it's hard to wrap all of this into, you know, an hour-long interview. People can certainly go if they want to follow up. There's a lot of pictures and videos that I've posted on our Schooner Creek Farm Facebook page and on our website as well. And actually, I had an extensive article and photos on our GoFundMe campaign, which is to fund legal expenses. And I should tell you, John, I just found out today that the GoFundMe campaign has been shut down. Radicals that call themselves, so New York City Antifa, local group, No Space for Hate, and these radical leftist anarchist groups have been campaigning and sending mass emails to GoFundMe to try to get our GoFundMe shut down. They were not successful. Fortunately, about a month ago, GoFundMe contacted me and said, we're looking into, you know, your account. Your funds are on hold. But then they said, well, we have reviewed your account and have found that you are not violating user rules at all, user agreement terms. And so you can keep your GoFundMe. So we were very happy to hear about that. That was over a month ago. And then just today I got an email very randomly from GoFundMe and they said, we have found your campaign to be in violation of user terms and it has been shut down. So yeah. So fortunately, the funds that were collected there, we were able to keep. and there are maybe a few that we're not going to be able to keep, and they'll be refunding people. So essentially these groups, as I said, it's just been nonstop every time I turn around. And the city staff would do nothing. The mayor made public statements endorsing No Space for Hate, this group that has been trying to destroy our lives. There's even a photo of him and his wife, you know, standing kind of with their arms around these people while they're wearing their matching t-shirts that say No Space for Hate, Defund, White Supremacy. Protest groups of various sorts, but almost always the same people would come in different ways. The thing that went viral, if people remember in 2019, I don't know if your listeners saw this, but there's a group of Black Bloc Antifa who marched to our booth first thing in the morning. Our boys were in the pickup trucks, you know, like they always would be playing. My husband and I are standing there hoping to make some sales. And this group of about 13 people comes marching through Market wearing all black with black ski masks on, black shoes, black gloves, and they come and, you know, block our booth off so that customers can't approach our table. I thought they were going to kill us. I mean, I thought, oh, for sure, this, like, here it goes. You know, they're going to kill us right here. The whole market came to a hush. Other vendors were videotaping, and everybody was just like, oh my gosh, what's going on? Our kids were scared, had to call the police. And, you know, I'm on the phone with the dispatcher and I'm like, I need an officer here right now. She's like, oh, is this the farmer's market? Yeah, yeah. I already know about that. It was like she wasn't going to send the police. I had to argue with her.
You got to be kidding me.
Oh, it was so crazy. So crazy. And yeah, it just blows my mind. So this protest group, this one particular protest group, No Space for Hate, they were allowed to have a booth space in what's called Info Alley, which is a group where nonprofit organizations can hand out their information, and they pay $10 a day, and it's over kind of on the outskirts of Farmers Market. And this is a longstanding tradition. And, you know, you'll see groups like Republican Party, Democratic Party, or stuff from the local university or, you know, Science Club, Nancy Sewing Club, whatever. But this was an Antifa activist group called No Space for Hate. And they were not only allowed to have a space, but the market waived the fees for them, didn't even make them pay the $10. And then additionally, they were allowed to sell products like stickers, t-shirts, you know, postcard signs and stuff, which is totally against the rules. That's, everybody knows that if you're in the Info Alley and you're one of these nonprofits, you can distribute information, but you cannot sell stuff. So yeah, they were selling items there and then posting about it on their Facebook page. It's so terrible. And I guess I'm kind of skipping around, but the worst part about all of this was the mayor having endorsed all of this, because I actually knew the mayor. Like, I mean, I would see him at Market every week. I had done landscaping at his house at least two times. You know, I had planted trees, done a bunch of weeding and mulching for them. We were on very good terms. I'm a weaver. I weave shawls with natural, like, cotton and wool, and I dye the yarns and stuff and sell those weavings at the farmer's market as well. And him and his wife had purchased one of my very special shawls as a gift for their mother. And when all of this started, the mayor just completely condemned us, condemned Schooner Creek Farm, and took the side of these radicals, these, you know, I guess what I would say probably the real terrorists, the people who are actually terrorizing someone, and, you know, endorse them. Supposedly, oh, they even bought t-shirts. His wife was, you know, gleefully posting online on one of the Antifa activists' personal Facebook pages. The wife of the mayor. Can you imagine? This is supposed to be a prestigious position, and this woman is commenting on one of these Antifa activists' pages and, you know, pandering to him and saying, oh, don't worry. No, my husband and I have supported your cause from day one. We've even purchased t-shirts. It's just so awful. And essentially, this went on for so long, and we were helpless because we do not have any savings. I mean, my husband and I, just him and I with our little business, we have three kids, I homeschool, and we work from home. This is what we do for a living. And, you know, the business is small, but it has grown each year. It's become more popular, and we had gained more customers. In the early 2019, we had just built this huge new greenhouse. This big, beautiful, huge new greenhouse was full of vegetables. And we were expecting our business to boom in 2019. That was supposed to have been our best year yet. We were probably going to have double the sales that we had had in 2018 because of our new greenhouse. I mean, we were one of the most popular booths at the farmers market. The farmers market itself had featured our booth, our, like pictures, photos of our booth in their own marketing materials, you know, and then just for the mayor and the staff to do this, it was just the ultimate betrayal. And honestly, I feel like they totally endangered us. I guess, again, so more details. In August 2019, the mayor shut the market down for 2 weeks because there were so many protesters in the market and it was so crazy. He shuts the market down, but what did he? Why? Why did he shut it down? Not because of Black Bloc Antifa, not because of protesters. No, not because of them. Because of, quote, vendors with ties to white supremacy. So, I mean, that was just even further damaging to our reputation because then we have the whole town hating us even more and saying, oh, now because of you, we've had to shut the market down. And we're like, no, we're just trying to sell produce like we've always done. So, it's just crazy. It's crazy, John.
I'm trying not to interrupt because I'm so disgusted by this whole thing, but there's about 30 things I got to say here, but yeah, I mean, this is nothing but terrorism. This is state-sanctioned terrorism. I was looking it up. There's a billion different definitions of it, but Merriam-Webster, the systematic use of terror, especially as a means of coercion. And that's nothing more than what this is. This is terrorism. I mean, the irony is not lost on these terrorist pieces of garbage, but this is exactly what was going on in Nazi Germany. In Kristallnacht, they broke all the Jewish businesses' glass and destroyed their ability to buy and sell. They coerced them with fear and terrorism into submission. And that's exactly what's going on here. And it's state sanctioned because the mayor's behind it. The city's behind it. These fools on the farmers market border behind it. They're just legitimizing the terrorism of one group against another. And it's purely a linguistic terrorism as well. It's semantical because their special little name or moniker says that they're anti-fascist or terrorists. So thus they're not. So perception has nothing to do with reality because people perceive that based on the linguistic moniker they have when in fact they're the terrorists. It's just insane. I mean, I mentioned this on another show a long time ago, but I mean, it's all linguistic terrorism as well because you could have an organization that says, I love puppies, and they're throwing puppies in a wood chipper, and people are still going to support the I Love Puppies organization regardless of what they're actually doing. It's just totally insane.
Yes. Yes, it is. That's it. It's the, they say, well, we're the good guys, so anything we say goes. And then at the same time, they've labeled us with a term, a derogatory term, which strips us of our humanity, which strips us of, you know, our right to exist. And gives them the green light to do harm. You know, it's like that's I've learned now over the years. That's why they do that. That's why they're calling me a white supremacist, a Nazi, which I'm not, those things at all. They're calling me that so that they can justify the terrorism. I mean, it's just it's so infuriating. And honestly, I spent so long being angry about this. But the fact is now I'm in the other stage of grief. I'm in the sadness. Like, I am honestly just so hurt. I mean, yes, I'm angry. I'm still angry, but I'm so hurt and devastated, to be honest with you. And the other thing, you know, just kind of on a more personal note is that being who we are, it's very much a part of our identity. You know, we're your farmer, you know, we grow for you.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it is. And it's not news to anybody, but this is exactly, again, what was done in Nazi Germany, but then all these other communist regimes as well, where they demonize a certain group. And thus, through that demonization campaign, they can legitimize the atrocities that will be committed against that group. I mean, that's just the playbook. That's exactly what this is. And you touched on this a moment ago, but just the psychological operation that they're running, just letting you know that they can get near your house, just letting you know that they can get near your family. I mean, that's just nothing but a psychological operation as well to weaken the defenses, to just get people to capitulate, and I suppose just wander into the camp aimlessly as opposed to getting bussed there.
This is very much a part of our identity. This is who we are. We have poured all that we had into this business. And it's not just a business of making money. It's very much a community-oriented business. It's face-to-face direct sales from what we have worked hard to grow, you know, this nourishing, beautiful, chemical-free produce, and we produce eggs and things like that. And then we sell it to a customer face-to-face. You know, I go to seed swaps and set up my table and talk about what we do. We've led farm tours here. You know, we're very much engaged in the community, and this is so much who we are that this has been such a blow on like a spiritual and psychological level too, where, you know, we have had to question like, oh my goodness, you know, are we going to be able to continue doing this for a living? Are we going to be able to recover from this? You know, is my husband going to have to go try to find some other job? I mean, he's, you know, neither of us are getting any younger, and this is what we had planned to do for the rest of our lives. You know, and hopefully be able to grow the business, put all the hard work into it so that we can pass it on to our children so that they could have the option of carrying on a business that, you know, that their parents had done the hard work to establish, and hopefully they could reap the fruits of it in the future. So, yeah, I mean, this has flipped our whole world upside down. And what's so terrible about it is that it's all based on lies. And of course, you know, sure, some of the statements that I said that were published, such as talking about my experience living in a neighborhood as one of the only white families as a child, and some of the black crime rates that we have seen in Indianapolis. So these are some of the statements that they had published. And you know, maybe those are offensive. Maybe talking about black crime rates is offensive to some people, but there's nothing illegal about it. And it certainly doesn't imply that I would want to harm others or that I hate others or that I have condemned entire races of people, which I've never done. That's just so stupid. So again, yes, like perhaps some of my views are controversial, but this is still a free country in America, and having diversity of thought is a very important thing. And it's, I think it's very scary when people are silenced and when we're no longer allowed to talk about facts. I mean, that's danger. That's like serious danger zone. So anyhow, yeah.
Well, that's exactly what it is. And to touch on some of these other methods of terrorism they're pulling off, I mean, it's obviously a litigious form of terrorism, but also an economical form of terrorism. And people sort of, I don't think this doxing thing is taken as seriously as it should be, but I mean, that's exactly what it is. They're economically impacting you and your family, and that's the premise of those tactics. They want people to feel shamed. They want people to feel that pressure from the community. They want people to lose not only monetary but social capital. They want them to lose it all just under the guise of whatever mystical term or phrase that you're not allowed to say today.
Right. Right, exactly. Yeah, there were, you know, I would kind of observe what some of these protesters were saying online while they weren't physically at market. And, you know, there were people saying, we won't stop until they're working at Burger King. So it's like to them, that was how they were going to define their success, is that my husband and I are no longer growing healthy organic produce and selling that in at our local farmers market. But yet flipping burgers at Burger King, like the mentality is just so insane. And then the reality of it too is like, well, even if we were working at Burger King, you know darn well you and all your people would be on the phone trying to get us fired from Burger King too, right? And one of these Antifa protesters is actually, he runs a homeless shelter. He runs a homeless shelter, but yet he's trying to get me to be homeless. You know, trying to shut down my ability to make a living and provide for my family. And you know what they have said? They said that we were using the farmers market to spread white supremacy. It's like just unbelievable.
That makes perfect sense. You want to cut in on your potential customers. That sounds like a pretty good business model.
Yeah, it's awful. It's really awful. And they spread rumors about us and said that we refuse to sell to people of color. This is just so ridiculous. Some of our best customers happen to be people of color, and we have friends of people that are people of color. And some of them were even at our booth going, Sarah, what's going on? Like, this is crazy. And they would get even attacked they would get attacked by the protesters, and the protesters would say, you know, why are you supporting them? It's just like they just don't stop. They don't stop. But you know, they just silence. They actually had formed a broadening inclusion subcommittee of the Farmers Market Advisory Council at market. And so it's like, okay, so they formed this subcommittee. They chose people to be on the committee. It was a diverse, you know, array of people of various ethnicities or orientations or whatever. And during the George Floyd protests that blew up all over the country last summer, you know, remember when police precincts were getting peacefully burned to the ground?
Oh, yeah.
So when all of that was going on, the Diversity and Inclusion Subcommittee of the Farmers Market issued a public statement about the events. And in that public statement, they basically were saying, you know, yes, we understand the cause. And I'm totally paraphrasing and probably butchering it here. But essentially, there was a couple of lines in that statement that weren't perfectly agreeing with the narrative of Black Lives Matter. It was something about we also have to acknowledge the violence that is perpetrated on, you know, Black people by Black people in their community or something like that. Oh, my goodness, you wouldn't believe it, John. It blew up. These same protesters were demanding to know who wrote this white supremacist statement, they were calling it. Some of them said, oh, was this written by Sarah Dye or Schooner Creek Farm? I mean, honestly, it seemed like a reasonable statement to me. I read through it and I thought this seems very fair and balanced. Turns out it was written by one of the only Black men on the subcommittee. He wrote it. You know, and so he was canceled and he was silenced because he wasn't radical enough, radical left enough. So
well, that's,
you know,
the silly irony with these clowns is that honestly, the most demonized people are the people of quote unquote color that don't follow communist narratives. I mean, they're the ones that are called Uncle Tom and worse from these communist pieces of garbage because they can't dare to have anyone, especially their protected classes, to step outside of the box and go, hey, wait a minute. Like, I don't want my community burned to the ground. I own a business and I'm Asian, or I own a business and I'm Black, or I own a business and I'm whatever. And yeah, we don't actually want our communities burned to the ground, destroyed. Like, they don't want that narrative because they want them to follow step with the communist diatribe so they can
keep on
pandering to them, I suppose. That's exactly what they've been doing.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Yeah, that's what we've seen left and right. It's crazy.
I promise I'm not going to go off on an education jag, but I tend to. But I feel that there is a definite common thread between the cult of academia and these acolytes of communism. Am I wrong?
I think you're right. I do. We see a lot of this activity coming out of college towns. It's very true. And recently, some of the agendas of these prominent professors has been exposed. You know, it's in public schools as well, not just universities, but, you know, they're certainly radical, and what's being taught behind closed doors to young, impressionable students who, you know, when people are young, they want to feel, they kind of go through a rebellious stage. They want to rebel against something that's kind of natural. And so that's, you know, they're preyed upon. They're preyed upon. And I know so many families who their college age kids right now, oh my gosh, and it's worse than it's ever been before. They won't even speak to their parents anymore. And the parents who are friends and acquaintances of mine are heartbroken. One family that comes to mind in particular, a local family, their son, they just don't understand what happened. Their son won't even come home for Thanksgiving. He won't even speak to them. And he's in college. He's in college at this local college town where I live. And it's because they disagree with him that, you know, that we should all feel guilty and condemn ourselves just because we're white. You know, and it's so ironic because they scream, you know, racism and supremacy and all these things all day. But none of us have ever touted supremacy. We do not consider ourselves supremacists at all. We value the true diversity of the earth. You know, it's the opposite. Like they project onto others that which they themselves promote and live by, you know, and I think that what it is that their ideology is a religious one. you know, many of these people lack traditional faith or spirituality, whether it's, you know, Christianity or one of the Abrahamic faiths or Buddhism or any kind of like spiritual connection. You know, a lot of them are atheists. No offense to atheists out there, but I do think this is interesting. A lot of these communists, radical leftists, they're atheists. They don't believe in a spiritual higher power, and their ideology is, it is their religion. So essentially, like, what they're doing, this is like they're persecuting people for not having the same religious beliefs as them, you know?
It's like a religious cult.
Oh,
goodness. I couldn't agree more. I mean, that's what I call it. I call it the cult of academia. I say it's K-12 indoctrination, college, university weaponization. And that's the absolute fact. I mean, you nailed it. That's one of the primary tenets of the Communist Manifesto. And that's why you see religion, particularly Christianity, demonized and just completely subverted in every communist nation. They have to do away with it and put the state as their god. So if you look at the cult of academia, they just put scientism as their god, whether it's Darwin or whoever. They put scientism, the cult of scientism. We know it all. We got it all figured out. You brain dead fools that believe in this guy in the sky, you're idiots, I tell you, because we've got it all figured out. It's all Darwin. Or it's all cultural relativism, which is just Frankfurt School bollocks. Again, ironically enough, out of Germany. I mean, that's exactly where our whole education system was predicated, on the Prussian model.
Yeah, well, the Frankfurt School, yeah, I haven't studied it in depth, but I do understand that it has very much influenced what's going on today. So I highly recommend people do look into that, including myself. I should probably look into it more. But what's interesting to me, too, about this new narrative that it's like, we believe in science. You see these signs. We believe in this. We believe in 150 genders. We believe in science. And it's like all of their beliefs. And it's like, yes, right. Those are your beliefs. Let's talk about the word belief, right? What does that mean? Belief. You can't believe in science, right? Like, a belief is something that implies a faith in something, if I'm not mistaken, right?
So absolutely right.
So they're combining those now, and they're saying we believe in science. Well, then let's let all of the science, all of the scientists have a platform then. Why are so many scientists and doctors who have alternative ideas being silenced and canceled? It's happening left and right, and the left, the communists, whatever we want to call them, the radicals, they won't look into that at all. And I think that that's certainly something that influenced my shift in my own thinking, was when, again, referring back to that Red Dawn example, it was like, realize you're not actually for free speech. You're not actually for truth and objectivity and fairness. You know, you do want to silence your opposition if it doesn't exactly, you know, agree with your thoughts or whatever. Excuse me, I'm not being totally articulate today.
No, but you're spot on. I mean, it almost follows this bizarre utopian model. And I mean, looking back at the punk and hardcore scene and at the communist nonsense now, it always follows this utopian ideal of there's no right or wrong. There's all relativism, basically, which is out of that Frankfurt School again. And it's, everything's accepted, everything's tolerant, but the irony is always accept what they disagree with. So yeah, I'm all for do what you want, but to a certain degree, I'm not going to go persecute somebody because they want to paint their house pink and mine's brick or what have you. I'm like, cool, whatever. You want to paint your office pink, go for it. But their whole model and mantra is you've got to follow step with whatever we say is right or wrong. That's kind of it.
Yeah, exactly. And they, you know, these people who've gone after us, like I said, they tried to say, well, we need to get Sarah and Schooner Creek Farm out of the farmer's market because they're promoting white supremacy at the market. That was kind of like their big lie that they were able to use to justify, like you said, the economic terrorism and the other types of terrorism that they were doing against us. But we all know that that's not the true reason. The true reason is that we think differently than them, and we are hated because we are not ashamed, and we are hated literally for being just traditional conservative Americans who have three white male sons. I mean, let's face it, white males are the most hated class by these people. They are the most hated, and you know, I'm, according to them, I'm supposed to be raising my children up to question them each morning as to whether or not they are really sure that they're boys, because maybe they might be girls. You know, I'm supposed to be having that conversation with them daily just in case they might be transgender. I mean, this is how these people think. I've been in circles of parents from these groups, and this is the type of conversations that they have. They say, here's another example. Every morning I sit my 5-year-old daughter down and have a discussion with her about race and white supremacy. Okay, that's child abuse.
Good God.
Okay, but yet these people who are the masters of projection will say that I shouldn't be allowed to have my children and raise my children in a classic upbringing where they're exposed to fresh air, where they're allowed to eat meat and cheese and milk, where I allow them to be who they are. I don't just, you know, if my son chooses a pair of, if my 4-year-old chooses to wear purple shoes, I'm not going to take him to a psychologist and start pumping him full of hormones because he might be a girl because he chose purple. I mean, this is literally, it's just, this is how a lot of these people think. And because I'm not raising my kids how they want me to raise them, they say I should have them taken away. But yet they're the ones who are promoting such an abusive culture. You know, so
it's really just so insane. Crazy. And I mean, I'm getting tongue tied. So maybe I'm just old school or really racist, but what's wrong with just waking up as a kid and playing and reading and just being a kid? You don't have to have these insane communist diatribe discussions every day to reinforce.
It's crazy.
Insecurity, yeah. And reinforce the victim mentality and reinforce all this complete insanity.
Right. Yeah. And so I know, like I said, sorry, I'm not as articulate as usual today, but there's just so much I wanted to talk to you about. And I know we didn't have, you know, we're packing it into an hour and a half here, but I want to go back to something I mentioned in the beginning, just to clarify, want to clarify more about this shift that happened in my thinking. And I was trying to say earlier that it was conversations with some of these people that I knew. It was reading articles. It was seeing what was being promoted, and then the feedback I would get by expressing a different viewpoint, okay? And that feedback was so vehemently hateful, and again, like this kind of religious, like, oh, you have violated, you know, our religion by thinking outside the box. It was so intense. And one of the examples of the things that caused such a huge shift in me, that I've sort of forgotten about and put on the back burner here, but it was the early sexualization of children. And this is something that people are not talking about, but this is a very real thing. I think it's a serious issue. One of the conversations I recall happening early on with other parents was, you know, there had been like a potluck or a party with a bonfire or something. And my son was only 5 or 6 at the time. And then someone had brought their child with them who was 10 or 11. And that child was wanting to play kissing in the dark or something like that with the 5-year-olds. And I, you know, immediately realized what was going on and stopped it. And so later this conversation was happening, you know, parents, we talk about these things with each other when you're friends. And it was like, oh no, that, you know, I was the bad one. They were like, oh, well, you need to get with the times. You know, it's very normal for children to do these things. Well, I'm sorry, but no, that is not appropriate. That is not okay. The leftists will try to say that's just children experimenting. Well, I say the protective mama bear says, no, that's an older child who has potentially been sexually abused, who is trying to do it to other younger children, one. And then two, we have to protect our children from having experiences that could be traumatizing later in life. So, you know, it was like this free for all. I started to realize, oh my gosh, I have nothing in common with my friends anymore. They were going to raise their kids one way, and I was not going to raise my kids that way at all. I was not going to intentionally or unintentionally allow things to happen to my kids that I was supposed to protect them from. You know, there's very much, I would say that the parenting issues were huge for me when this shift happened, just huge. And, you know, there was at the local library a drag queen story hour. And again, a lot of these parents were just thrilled about it. And we're posting pictures of their kids online. And I'm going, you know what? Let's be realistic. A lot of these people don't know what that culture is like. As a young person, back in my far lefty days, I spent plenty of time doing the whole, bar hopping scene. And a lot of times us girls would go to the gay bars because, you could go and dance and not get hit on by the guys. That's kind of the narrative, right?
Yeah.
And, and I'd had gay friends over the years. And, that's a very deep, complex subject that I don't want to get into today on this show. But what it boiled down to was that was certainly not something that I wanted to go out of my way to expose young children to. And I understand that their narrative is that children need to be exposed to it so that they don't hate it later, so that they don't go around harming gay people. That's not an argument. That's not an argument. And we have seen a phenomena happening in this modern day, in the past decade, the past 5 years, where now there are so many transgender children. And what I think is so sad is that many of those children are not truly. They truly were not born that way. It's been pushed on them, and it's pushed on them by the type of people I used to be acquainted with. It's absolutely promoted. It's seeds planted in their mind. It's the gender dysphoria it's cultivated and it's nurtured, and it's all very much boils down to a popularity contest. I mean, let's be honest, it does. It's they get pats on the back. The parents get pats on the back from each other if their child is having gender dysphoria or gender neutral things. It's like, no, young children do not have those things figured out at that age. Little boys might play with a Barbie doll. That does not mean that they are having gender dysphoria. It means that they're being imaginative. if your child is a boy and he's dressing up, as, a character that happens to be female, maybe another time he dresses up as Spider-Man. That doesn't mean that he's a real superhero. He's using his imagination and playing dress up. So it's interesting. It's certainly a topic worth looking into more deeply, but I have seen there are websites if parents are, wanting to learn more about that. There's a lot of websites now where parents are coming out and saying how much they regret being influenced by the radical left and how they've kind of woken up. And they are saying, oh my gosh, I got swept along with this narrative and I'm so glad I got out of it. My child is healthy and happy now. And it's just scary stuff. So anyhow, there was certainly, like I said, this big shift. And then now, what is it? Gosh, it's 2021 already. It's just, we filed going back to the farmer's market issue. We had been helpless. As I said, we were finally able to get an attorney to help us navigate the situation that was happening at market. And, again, it was just, oh my gosh, like the market staff was not enforcing the rules. We have the mayor, they're having meetings about us in City Hall, people giving speeches on podiums saying, that we were so bad and need to be kicked out. And then the farmers market director, a woman who I had never met before, showed up at a meeting. So I'm so sorry, John, I am skipping around today. But let me just back up little bit. So when the mayor shut down the market in August of 2019, blaming threats from white supremacist vendors or something like that, upon the market reopening 2 weeks later, I received an email from the police department director, and he said that he wanted to talk to me about my safety concerns when the market would reopen. And I was thrilled about this. So obviously I met with him right away. Was so happy, and I thought, oh my gosh, finally they're actually going to realize what the real threat to the safety of the market is here. And so I get to the meeting with him, and he's brought with him as a surprise the farmers market director. What is her title? The director of the Parks and Rec Department. I'm sorry, director of Parks and Rec Department. So she comes to the meeting, and I'm like, oh well, hello. So I meet her. So he tells me this chief of operations from the BPD, he implies that there's a threat of a sniper from a parking garage. And he shows me a map of the market and he's like, yeah, it's in the line of sight from a sniper. And I said, well, has somebody made a threat? Like, oh, well, I can't give you any information or confirm or deny whether or not there's been a threat. And I'm like, oh my gosh, Simon, I'm freaking out. I'm thinking, he says, well, we think that, him and the farmers or the board of directors lady says, sorry, Parks and Recreation lady say, well, we think you should move your booth space. That's what they're trying to get me to do, move my booth space. And I'm thinking to myself, oh man, maybe I should. This is scary. Then the Parks and Recreation Department director kind of made a slip up in that meeting. And it was revealed that the real reason they wanted me to move my booth space was so that there would be more space for the protesters. And so we weren't in the middle of the market. Our space that we had in the middle of the market, we had had for 3 years. It's a point system. So vendors accumulate points, and then that's how you select your space at the beginning of the market season. And it takes vendors years to get enough points to get such a nice spot. We had a really nice spot. We were in the heart of the market under a huge metal awning. So we had the shade. It was a large space. We could park your vehicle. And this was a hard-earned space. And here I was on the verge of maybe giving that up because I was being led to believe that there had been a sniper threat against us. And so, you know, thankfully, the truth was accidentally on their part revealed when it turned out that the reason the parks director had been brought to the meeting, you know, was to kind of facilitate all of this. And it was certainly, it certainly felt very coercive and it felt like I was being tricked. The spot where they were suggesting that I move, it was on the outskirts of market. It was exposed on all sides. It would have put me closer to a particular group of protesters that was coming each week. And it was still just as much, you know, in a line of sight from not only one parking garage, but another one.
Well, that was nothing more than what you said. I mean, it was nothing more than a tactic and just kind of lends more credence to what I was thinking and saying and probably yourself earlier that they're all in on it.
Yeah.
The police, the city council, the mayor, the folks in the market. It just seems so prima facie. That's exactly what's going on. They're just trying to subvert anything you guys are doing and put you out of business.
Right. So this is an example of some of the things that were going on, and we did not have an attorney. And it just got to the point where we were like desperate. Well, by some miracle, we received a large enough donation at the end of August to finally retain an attorney. And it was an attorney I had spoken with earlier on in the year, so we already knew that he would probably be a good fit. And again, during this time in early September, the same woman, the same Parks and Rec Department director, was like pressuring me to meet with her privately, with her and the city attorney. She was pressuring me to meet with her privately and was calling it a mediation. She was saying, you need to be cooperative. You need to come to this mediation. I said, absolutely, I will come to a mediation. That's fine. But after what I've experienced thus far, I am not going to come until I have an attorney. Please give me time. I'm trying to retain an attorney. Literally the day after she posed it in quite a demanding way, implying that I was being uncooperative, I had the attorney. So first thing, it's like we get the attorney and we go to this meeting. And guess what? The city attorney was there. The parks director was there, but there was no mediator. So, I mean, this is clearly was not a mediation. And they made the mistake of saying there that day, right in front of the attorney, our attorney, that the meeting was that they wanted to discuss issues at the farmers market. And they wanted to tell me and my husband, Schooner Creek Farm, that we were not allowed to display any signs in the market, that we were not allowed to use any political speech in the market, and that we also needed to stop bringing a particular stand assistant who had come to market a few times to help us at the booth that year, who helps us on our farm because he had also been doxxed and slandered because he made the protesters feel uncomfortable. This is a law-abiding citizen. He's a veteran. Yeah, I mean, he stands at the booth and helps, you know, bag produce. But yet we were told we couldn't bring him to the market. I mean, all of these things are very much violations of our constitutional rights to free speech and other things. And they did relent a little bit when pressured by the attorney. So thank goodness I had the attorney there. I mean, could you imagine another you know, like coercive backdoor meeting with this Parks Department director. And, you know, this time
it was a setup. That's it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Once they saw that you had legal representation, they just sort of.
Yeah. Well, they continued to, you know, do the same thing, though, which is what's so crazy. Even after we had the attorney, you would have thought, okay, maybe they were going to really start enforcing the rules now. Maybe they would consider taking a different course. No, absolutely not. It actually worsened. It continued to worsen. That was in September of 2019. Every single week after that, September, October, and November, there were new protests. This time they were all wearing matching purple shirts that said boycott Schooner Creek Farm, defund white supremacy, marching in front of our booth, forming human walls in front of our booth, heckling customers as they were passing by. On multiple instances, one guy in particular who happens to be a professor at the local university walked by and did an obscene gesture to me in front of my booth, just so disgusting and rude and disturbing. And the whole time, market staff is just observing it. Police officers are observing it. And they had said in that secret meeting with our attorney present, they had said, you know, well, our attorney had discussed with them, okay, what are you going to do to enforce market rules? We have an issue here with these people being allowed to protest in the market. What are you going to do? And they said, here are the market rules. We will enforce the market rules. The market rules are no protesting. If there is protesting, the market staff will ask the people to relocate. And if they do not, then the police will be called. Never, it didn't happen at all. Well, I should say it happened on a couple of occasions, and it worked just fine. So in November, this group used a busking space. Well, the busking spaces where people play music for money in the market are things that you have to apply for ahead of time. It says in the market rules you have to fill out an application, and that whatever kind of music you're playing needs to be something that's conducive to a welcoming atmosphere in the market. They were allowed busking spaces on multiple occasions and performed a song with a huge group of people with singing and dancing and colorful hula hoops and colorful costumes to bring attention to their organized protest. A song where they were saying, it's a song that they had put their own words to, that's written by somebody named, I think, like Gogo Bortel, or I don't know if I'm saying the name correctly. It's Start Wearing Purple. And they changed the words, and it was Start Wearing Purple With Us Now, but they kept saying over and over again, no neo-Nazis in the market, no neo-Nazis in the market, and just blasting it with instruments. They had somebody there in a huge blow-up unicorn costume, which obviously this is very much connected to Unicorn Riot and the original Docs. I mean, this whole thing has just been this huge concerted, coordinated effort. And I sat there and videotaped what they were doing. I watched and I kept thinking, why aren't they doing anything? The police watched it. So after they were done, after they did their whole performance and the song was over, this was the second time they had done this, a second week in a row. Then finally, a few of them were arrested. And you will not be surprised to hear that the charges were dropped immediately.
Of course.
So, yeah, it's just.
Yeah, you mentioned the professor. That's kind of what I was alluding to previously. You often see the ties to Antifa and BLM right in line and directly connected to, more often than not, professors.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that particular professor, we had actually seen him at market in the past wearing a patch that said Unicorn Riot on it. So, I mean, it's something that, you know, people might want to look into, because from my understanding, that group, Unicorn Riot, is engaged in hacking, which is illegal. So,
But then again, everything you just mentioned should have been a punishable offense.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's like nobody's coming to save us, right?
It doesn't seem like it, no.
Yeah, so thankfully we have an attorney, and we have been able to keep him retained. We filed a lawsuit February I believe it was last February. I believe it's been 1 year now. And it's been entirely funded through donations. We would never have been able to fight back without donations. And I'm just beyond grateful to everybody who's contributed. We have a very strong case. We are seeking a jury trial. And the latest is that, well, we just completed depositions in December and January. So those are done. And I guess the real kicker here, too, is that the city is countersuing us, which is just crazy. Their argument, which is so weak, is that we signed a vendor contract, which is something all vendors sign, and there's, you know, fine print in there that says that we won't sue. You know, there's like covenant not to sue or something. This is very typical with farmers markets, and obviously this exists for the purpose of, you know, if there's like bad weather or if the farmer doesn't have their own insurance and somebody stubs their toe or breaks their foot, you know, or
if they're condoning and allowing a militarized communist organization to destroy and blackball you. That should be a
right. Well, and the thing is that the mayor would say over and over, well, because of the First Amendment, we can't kick Schooner Creek Farm out. However, he would say, myself as mayor and myself personally fully support and endorse what you all are doing to destroy them, essentially. And that's paraphrased. Obviously, that's not an exact quote, but it's so basically what I think that they thought is that, of course, they couldn't kick us out of the market because we had not done anything wrong. And that would be a violation of our constitutional rights. So what they thought was, oh, well, we'll just support the terrorism against them and the protests against them so that they're utterly destroyed. And then we won't have to deal with this anymore. And you know what they could have done at the very beginning of all this? They could have said, protests are not allowed in the market. There are longstanding rules. If anybody violates this, they will be arrested and will be, you know, prosecuted to the full extent of the law. We will not tolerate this inside the farmers market whatsoever. They could have said that. They could have made a statement like that. They could have also said that, you know, that they support their farmers. And as long as farmers are abiding by the rules, you know, but no, instead they come out with statements of essentially promoting the narrative that Schooner Creek Farm are white supremacists. So, I mean, this was just so damaging to our reputation. And we're going to keep marching on, though. I mean, that's what I think is important. I really want people to understand. We have always done this. This is who we are, and it's all we've ever wanted. I know that that might sound crazy, but you might call us simple people. We only want to be able to grow produce and eggs and continue showing up to a local farmers market, continue growing our CSA, which is our subscription program where people kind of join in the farm and they get a share of the harvest. They pay up front at the beginning of the season. This is my passion. This is what I've done since I was a little girl, you know, cutting flower bouquets for my mom at her plant nursery and business where she had a landscaping company. And it's all we've ever wanted to do. And that's all that we want to do still. We just want to be able to continue doing this for a living. We have big goals. I mean, these people have tried to crush us. And while we have taken such a huge blow, monetarily, financially, spiritually, psychologically, our spirits are not crushed. And we want to do so much. And I do think that we will grow again someday. We'll get our business back to the place where it was before. It's just going to take time. Love the opportunity to be able to do interviews like this to get the word out about what's happened and to tell people that, you know, please don't believe their lies. Please don't believe what these people are saying about us. It's not true. We are kind, loving people. So recouping the reputation, rebuilding essentially. And I mean, John, there's so many things I want to do. I want to teach people. We have people ask all the time if they can come and learn how to garden. These things are going to become even more important as we see all the uncertainty happening in America right now. And people have taken such a huge hit financially with COVID-19 and stuff. I know a lot of people are wanting to get into gardening, growing their own food. So yeah, we're going to be great. There's good things coming in the future. We want to teach workshops, maybe take on apprentices and interns, have classes.
That sounds beautiful.
get back into farm tours.
Well, I got to get you back on again just to talk about the whole teaching angle. If nothing else, just to talk about the homeschool thing, because I think that's one of the keys is to stop playing on their field, basically, to withdraw from the social media, to stop going to the public indoctrination centers. I just term it as stop sacrificing your kids to the cult. But I think what you're doing is beautiful as far as teaching your own children, as far as providing a potential business for them later, as far as just growing your own food. That's so beautiful. I love it.
Oh, thank you.
Well, how can people better support you? I know that you mentioned they were taking one of your payment processors down, but how can people get in touch with you, or at the very least just follow what you're doing and contribute if they can?
Thank you. Well, yes, we are still accepting donations for legal expenses. And actually, we do have these coffee mugs for sale right now, which are kind of cool. And we've got t-shirts and sweatshirts and stuff, and they have our logo on them. It's kind of hard to see in the light here, but all of the proceeds from selling these things go towards our legal expenses. The links for that are available on our website, which is schoonercreekfarm.org. And also, people, if they would like to make a contribution online securely with a credit card, you can do that on our website. And then we also are set up to take cryptocurrency donations as well, if people are interested in that. So yeah, definitely appreciate, you know, every amount counts, and you know, hopefully we can see this through to the end. Well, I should say we will see this through to the end, and we will hopefully be able to come back with a story of, you know, victory over this evil, and then just move on with our lives, you know, just continue working in the garden and not have to think about all of this traumatic junk anymore. I'm just, yeah, really looking forward to that. So thanks so much for having me on and for the opportunity.
Well, that sounds great. If you'll stick around for about a second, I'll talk to you off air.
Okay.
All right. Perfect. All right. Well, that was a heck of an interview, folks. If you missed any of that, feel free to go to anomicage.com. You can find all the audio, all the video, not only from today's great guest, but those of the past as well. Remember, you can't do everything, but you can do something. So please try to get out there and do your part and make that difference. And until next time, I'll be seeing you sooner than later in the Anomic Age.
Thank you for listening to the Anomic Age, a John Age project. For past shows, further info, and to comment, go to anomicage.com. That's anomicage.com. Till next time, thank you for listening to the Anomic Age. I'm going to go to the next one.